everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing our show. We finally had an off day with the monsoon yesterday, Tom. There was virtually nothing going on with radar, and I will take it. I mean, we've had about 6 inches up at the Buckmaster bungalow, and so it feels like when the monsoon does resume, it will be monsoon part B.
And you know what else?
What?
The National Weather Service is saying we may not hit 100 degrees this afternoon.
I will take that.
What?
They're saying 99, but you know, that close, it wouldn't take much to push us over the edge.
Mm. It's basically a freeze warning for us.
That's
get out the alert.
That's our friend Dylan Smith. We'll introduce Dylan in a moment. Today, the final day of July. Wednesday, the 31st of July, 2024, the Buckmaster radio program will begin our 15th year in January. 15 years almost here already with the radio show. Coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here in town. We've got 5 radio stations under one roof, the most recent acquisition. The very popular station, 101.7, The Drive. But this station is 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our live listening on my website and, of course, all of our podcasts going back to the first week of January in 2011 when we do our telephone interviews, and folks are encouraged to join us. 790-2040. If you have a comment on yesterday's primary, love to hear from you. 790-2040, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, with me in studio, Dylan Smith, the editor and co-publisher and co-founder of TucsonSentinel.com, and his ace reporter is with us, Jim Ninsel, the political reporter for the Sentinel. Gentlemen, how are you?
Pretty good. A little bit tired. Election days are, election nights are always long, but many thanks to Jim and the entire Sentinel crack team for being out at ever so many election night gatherings pretty much all night long.
Well, not to make this a mutual admiration society, but I think Dylan did an extraordinary job of tracking across Dylan and the rest of the team, I should say.
Mm-hmm. The growing team, right?
A growing team did an extraordinary job of tracking so many. I don't even have a count of how many. Dozens of races.
Lots of moving parts last night.
And updating and keeping track of who was up and who was down. That's no easy task.
Mike Jetty was down. Surprisingly, I had predicted Conover would win. I figured 5 to 10% she would win this primary, but it was a 2-to-1 margin. Jim Ninsel.
Yeah, you know, I talked to folks at the various parties last night, and the general sense that there was surprise among a lot of them at the how wide the margin was in that race, but the general sense I was getting from them was that this was a race where Mike Jetty's message really didn't appeal to Democratic voters, and that he definitely did get his message out. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I know the Conover team was concerned about how that election was going to go, but the general sense was it was the wrong get tough on crime message for a Democratic primary, and it just wasn't going to resonate.
Well, look at who turns out for primaries, right? That's your the core of your base are the people who cast ballots in primary elections. It's not the general electorate that show up in November. It's very, very few independents participate. And for Mike Jetty to win, well, this was basically the election for county attorney because there's nobody else on the ballot in November. But he would have had to have brought in a whole lot of independents, and he was kind of targeting that sort of message.
Mm-hmm.
And
independents to vote in a primary, they have to take that extra step, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, they can sign, they can choose whichever one they want.
But he was counting on a lot of them doing that.
Apparently. Yeah. And because let's be honest, running in a Democratic primary against a woman incumbent who is somewhat progressive, I mean, and trying to find a lane as a white man running to the right of that person in a Democratic primary is a very, very tough thing to do.
And we saw that the voters skewed older, I think, in that primary from some of the data we saw of who was voting. And it's often older women voting in Democratic primaries. So that's
the core of it, especially here in Pima County, right?
Yeah. And I think even across the country, according to some of the political strategists I've talked to. So I think it was the not a message that was going to work.
Knock it off an incumbent is always tough.
Yes.
But there is a race where that seems to be happening.
Yeah, that's the race where Senator Justine Wadzak, one of the most controversial figures in Arizona politics, is trailing former State Senator Vince Leach by less than 1,000 votes, right?
911 votes at the last tally we had released.
911, which is an interesting number for Justine Wadzak.
That there are a number of puns one can make, and our columnist Blake Morlock made several of them in his column last night about this situation with Leach. Seems very likely to pull this out and regain the seat that he was primaried out of by Wadzak in the last election.
Or at least have a chance to regain the seat,
because regain the Republican mantle banner to run in November, because he will have an opponent.
He will have an opponent. Who is that, Jim Nitzel?
That is John McClain, a guy who's a former defense contractor. He launched a branch of a company called Arete in Tucson, which is involved with basically building sensors for the Defense Department to be able to see underwater and see in the sky. And he retired about 10 years ago and then became active in the local dog rescue community. So incredible bio as a moderate political candidate running. But I heard from a lot of Democrats last night some disappointment in this result, because they feel as though Justine Wadzak would have been an easier candidate to run against in November than Vince Leach will be. They had you know, a lot of opposition research put together and were really ready to go. They still feel as though they have a decent shot against Vince Leach, but that is a +9 Republican district, so a tough climb. I did talk to Vince Leach this morning. He said he's not counting his chickens until they hatch. Okay. They have not hatched yet, he said. But he did mention that, you know, in this is a relatively new district. It was drawn for the 2022 election cycle, and he was somebody who had represented the northwest side of Tucson previously, and the way this district was drawn, it brought in a lot of the east side, and he wasn't very well known out there, and he spent the last 2 years introducing himself to voters on that side of town. And I do think he saw that he was ahead in Pima County as well as Pinal County, where his strength was. And last time out, there were three candidates in that race, and Justine did not win a majority of the votes, somewhere in the 40% range, if I recall correctly. And I think they're obviously still counting the votes, but it does look like Justine Wadzak at this point is in a bit of trouble with her reelection effort, I think.
And Democrats very much want that seat. You know, the margins in the state legislature in both the House and the Senate are
very
so narrow. They're really trying to seize on any opportunity they can to get another couple of seats and take control of the legislature.
Frank Antonori is back.
He is. Frank is
winning
a
seat in the former state senators.
Former state senator. He is winning a seat down in Cochise County.
On the Board of Supervisors.
On the Board of Supervisors, and that was a seat held by Peggy Judd, who refused to certify an election, and I believe is still facing some criminal charges related to that.
Things
bill,
are,
if I'm not
still
mistaken.
Underway regarding that. And, Antonori is going to be the, you know, Republican standard bearer in that general election and very likely to win because that's a very, very Republican district he's running in.
Any other surprises? We mentioned the margin that Jetty lost by and this, I guess it's a surprise.
About
Senator Wadczak. What else surprised you?
Well, the Jetty losing by so much, him losing was not a surprise.
No.
Right?
No.
Not so much, that uphill battle, but certainly that was a pasting. Another margin story is the margin between Kerry Lake and Mark Lamb in the Republican Senate.
It was much narrower than a lot of people thought, right?
A week ago, the Lake campaign was bragging about how they were going to win by at least 30 points, right?
Yeah.
And what was the margin at the last count? It was nowhere near
about
that.
Half that, right? Yeah. There was,
53 to 40-something.
Even though Lake's campaign outspent Lamb like 5-1, and she has much more name recognition across the state because of her, continued denial of her loss in the previous election.
I have heard from Democratic political consultants that this is an outcome they're much more happy with. And
they'd rather run against her.
And that, as you point out, she did not dominate in that race. And what they have told me is that her negatives are extremely high. Mm-hmm. And they rarely have seen somebody with worse negatives running statewide in Arizona, and I think that was demonstrated by her loss in the gubernatorial race. Where she still says it wasn't a loss, but I think she has been unsuccessful in pressing that case.
All right, let's pause right here. When we come back, Juan Ciscomani pretty much cruising to an easy primary win. Let's talk about the Pima County Board of Supervisors and some of the Pima County races, including the race for sheriff, as Buckmaster continues the day after the primary. Dylan Smith is here, along with Jim Nintzel. Both of them work for TucsonSentinel.com. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to JamCulinaryConcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the day after the primary. So appropriately enough, we are talking about the primary and the results. Jim Nensel is here, political reporter, TucsonSentinel.com. And his boss, Dylan Smith, the co-founder, co-editor, co-publisher, is with me in studio, Dylan Smith. And before we get back to the primary, and who knows, this might have a political connection, but Natalie Robbins, your fine young reporter, is doing a nice job about looking into the jail, three-part series. Took a lot of work, right?
Well, yeah, this was a an investigation we did. It's called Fatal Consequences. And Natalie Robbins, who is now our creative community solutions reporter, we just hired her full-time about 2 months ago. She spent more than a year digging into this for us, pretty much nonstop, and months and months prior to that, actually. And it builds on a lot of digging we've done over about the past 5 years into really how the Pima County Jail is one of the most dangerous places to end up in jail in the entire United States.
Oh, really?
It has a death rate that is off the charts compared to the average, and in a number of years has been, or at least 1 year, I should say, like something like an 18-month stretch, was a more dangerous place than Rikers Island in New York City.
Wow.
So, and on a per capita basis, of course, because it's not nearly as large, but... there are tons of challenges there because it's an old, old facility in quite a bit of it. There are some newer parts, but it's not it has not been maintained very well. The physical plant is not great. There have been staffing issues. And, you're dealing with some pretty vulnerable people end up in jail, whether they're being arrested and awaiting trial or serving short sentences. It's folks who don't have the greatest health. Many of them have addiction issues. And just in the main, the healthcare situation in the jail is terrible, and everyone admits it.
And the person...
But we can't seem to come up with a good fix.
Person who runs the jail is Sheriff Chris Nanos. Jim Nensel, how did he perform in yesterday's primary, and who will he be facing off against in November?
He did fairly well, I would say, in yesterday's primary.
Yeah.
He handily dispatched his challenger, Sandy Rosenthal, who had worked in the department for more than three decades, if I recall correctly, and just had made the case that Sheriff Nanos was not managing the department properly, that there were he certainly was concerned about the jail deaths that he had seen, and also the the sense that there's a lot of morale issues within the department. But that was not a message that, again, appealed to Democratic primary voters. And he looks like he'll be running against someone who actually works at our jail, Heather Lappin, who is a commander, East Side commander, something along those lines. I can't quite remember the exact title, but she pulled out of a three-way primary against another former veteran lawman who had worked at that department, Bill Phillips, as well as another fellow who works as a private detective named Terry Frederick.
So it's Heather versus Chris.
Yes,
Pretty much. Lappin was reluctant to declare victory last night, even though she seems to have a pretty healthy lead that will be hard to overcome.
And Bill Phillips said, you know, he's behind, but let's see where things go when I spoke with him.
How about Jen Allen, Jim Nensel? Jen will, it looks like she's on track to become take the seat that Sharon Bronson held forever on the Board of Supervisors.
I think Jen Allen really assembled a pretty impressive campaign compared to her challengers. You look, she raised more money than the three of them and combined, and really managed to pull in a wide range of endorsements within the Democratic Party, from Raul Grijalva to former Congressman Ron Barber to half the Tucson City Council, as well as Mayor Raheena Romero. And she just really worked it. And as a result, again, got more votes than all of her challengers.
She even got
combined
endorsements from outside of Tucson.
She did. Jane Fonda, at the last minute last week, came in and endorsed her.
She was topping 40% of the vote in a four-way race, which is a pretty good lead.
Yeah, and I asked her last night if she'd gotten a Barbarella bump from the endorsement.
Oh, you have to be of a certain age. You have to be a child of the 60s like your host here to remember that one.
Yeah, she said that there wasn't a huge
Barbarella.
A big fundraising bump as a result of that, but I don't know that she needed it. And she will be, she's used to work for the League of Conservation Voters. She has worked for the Arizona ACLU, had a lot of support within the conservation community, within the legal community, and among Democrats in general, obviously, judging from the results of that race.
What else do we need
but
to cover?
She still needs to win in November, right?
She's up against Republican Janet Wittenbrocker, who ran for mayor last time. Speaking of Sharon Bronson, I would say one person observed to me last night that Sharon made two big endorsements in both the county attorney's race. She endorsed Mike Jetty, and in the race to succeed her, she endorsed Edgar Soto, and neither of those went very well. So
no.
There's some, I think there was some conversation about what kind of influence she has in her retirement, and it doesn't seem like a whole lot.
All right, let's quickly go over to the United States Representative race, Juan Ciscomani, rematch coming up there, Dylan, right?
Indeed. Ciscomani pretty easily took that Republican primary against Wynn, who did not win.
Kathleen Wynn, yeah.
And we'll be going up against Kristen Engel again, as you mentioned, in November. And I think Democrats are pretty fired up to try and get this seat back in the Democratic column.
Yeah, you've seen the last two quarters. Kristen Engel has outraged Juan Ciscomani, and you can, I think, expect them, as they have already done, to really work on portraying him as too extreme for the district. That was a race she lost by 2 percentage points last time, and the Democrats did not really invest in that race last time out, and I think you're seeing a lot more,
especially at the national level. The Democrats just paid it a little bit of lip service and maybe paid for a pizza party last time around, and now they're putting in a pretty healthy amount of money. But it's a much more Republican district than it used to be.
Yes.
When it was redrawn.
Yeah, it is.
Any other supervisorial races that we need to mention, Jim?
You know, Vanessa Bechtol was at mm-hmm. the party last night, and there's a lot of Rex Scott, who clobbered his challenger.
There's a young man who...
Jake Martin was his name, and
but it will
college
be,
student making his first run for office, 21 years old.
There'll be a rematch and there with Steve Spain.
And one of the things that Rex Scott said was, you know, 4 years ago, people said he couldn't win his district because it was too Republican leaning, and he did. And he's, you know, he said that same thing can happen with Vanessa over in District 4. Now, District 4 leans a little more Republican than District 1 did.
And that's Steve Christie, the only Republican on the Board of Supervisors, is the incumbent.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly an uphill climb for Vanessa, but they are definitely full steam ahead on that one.
Any final thoughts, Jim and Dylan, on primary 2024?
I think we've covered just about everything. It seemed to be a pretty good night for incumbents in general, except some of those town council races and South Tucson City Council, not so much.
And Oro Valley as well, I think the incumbents were losing up there. So
down in Sorita, there were incumbents who you're talking very low turnout races, so they may change in the coming days as more and more votes are counted. So we can't call these races yet, but the incumbents in those races were facing pretty stiff challenges.
And I think looking ahead, the CD6 you mentioned, the U.S. Senate race is going to be real interesting, the LD17, but also the initiatives. The abortion initiative is going to be a big deal moving forward. The immigration initiative that the Republicans put on the ballot will be big.
Which is that still being challenged, the immigration initiative?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Jim, I'll see you actually on Friday on our Friday Focus interview is with the Attorney General.
Yes.
Chris Mays will be with us, and we'll talk after the interview with Chris. Tim Steller is going to join us. He'll have some comments also about the election coming up on Friday.
Excellent.
So, Dylan, thank you very much.
People can
find out more about Tucson Sentinel by just going to the website, right?
Come on over to TucsonSentinel.com and read all about it.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
All right. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're talking about yesterday's primary election, kind of deconstructing the results that came in, and we'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute. But first, I want to talk about Green Things and Zocalo Village. Over very conveniently located for all of your gardening needs at 3384 East River Road. Their website is greenthingsaz.com, and their sister business is Zocalo Village, all that great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and even Europe. Green Things and Zocalo Village, 13-acre site, looking really good. The rain has been very kind to Green Things, but perhaps the hail has not been kind to your garden this season, this summer monsoon season. So time to do a little bit of a replenish of the garden. Check out Green Things. All right. And when we do our telephone interviews, and we're going to be doing one here momentarily, that's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. General Ted Maxwell has led the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as president and CEO of that organization from actually since 2018. And he had nearly 34 years of military service, including 15 years active duty Air Force and nearly 20 more in the Arizona Air National Guard. He retired as a major general in 2018. His final military position was Commander, Arizona Air National Guard. In 2021, then Governor Ducey appointed the general to represent Pima County on the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board. He is also the Arizona State Transportation Board representative on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority, RTA, Board of Directors, which is trying to craft a next RTA Next program. And we may touch on that during our time here with the general. But first, I want to, first of all, welcome General Maxwell. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Bill. I hope you've got me loud and clear, and I'm sorry I could not be in the studio with you today.
Yeah, that you had a scheduling conflict. No problem. At least we're going to be able to hear you telephonically weigh in on. You heard Jim and Dylan with some of their remarks, and let's kind of continue on. First of all, your overview of primary 2024. Some of your thoughts, General Maxwell.
Well, my first couple quick thoughts is there were some definite differences. If you look local races through state races and even some of the larger races that we've seen in the past. Overall, the state legislature, you would say that in the primaries, at least on the Republican side, the more conservative MAGA candidates seemed to fare very well. Now, there were some exceptions. You've already touched on LD-17 with Vince Leach. But, you know, Mark Fincham's coming back. He's out in front pretty significantly over Ken Bennett, who in LD-1 was the what I would call the swing vote in the Senate when it came to keeping the Republicans, you know, that taking that 16-14 lead. Senator Bennett used that position and leveraged to change some of the language on some of the bills that got through, including some of the ones that we're going to see on the ballot. But also, he played that role well. Well, you know, Senator Fincham, who we're familiar with down here, I should say soon to be Senator Fincham, he's running in a District 1 up in Prescott, is a very conservative district, so the Republicans going to be there. There was Senator Bennett, Senator Fincham, and another candidate that they thought was also very farther, more conservative than Senator Bennett. They thought that would work to his advantage. It didn't. Mark Fincham's totals were pretty significantly higher, and he's got about a 10,000 vote lead. They haven't, you know, it's not final, but I think he's going to survive, and he will bring his conservative values and views back to the Senate. And it'll be interesting to see him and Vince Leach back together, possibly working together. I do believe at this point, the latest numbers I heard, they said it was up by, he was up by 911. They're now up to 97% of the precincts that have not reported. Those remaining precincts in LD-17 are from Pinal County. So, former Senator Leach is now up to a 943 vote lead. So he's expanded a little bit, and Pinal County is going to predominantly lean to Senator Leach. So we'll come down to how many of the signatures they're having to verify. But if you look here local, I'd say the Democratic primary elections turned out what you'd expect from a Democratic primary election. I think there was a lot of excitement by certain peaks of people in the community that thought there could be a turnover in the county attorney. You know, Edgar Soto, you mentioned him earlier, had some folks, and a lot of those folks supporting both Mike Jetty and Edgar Soto probably came from the business community. But I think this is a reminder that numbers that turn out in the primaries are small.
Yes.
And it is the high propensity voter, both Republican and Democrat, who shows up. So to run from a moderate platform in either party right now is pretty difficult to do. And I think we saw that bear out in some of these early results we're seeing.
You know, the Jetty campaign may, when they, well, looking at the results, did misread going into this. And a lot of people were saying that, yeah, there are a lot of issues that were almost like former employees of the county attorney's office who weren't happy. But when it came to the general voter, trying to translate the discontent to the primary voter was very, very hard, General Maxwell.
No, I absolutely agree with you, especially the primary voter. If you look at the turnout right now, based on the results we've got for that District 3 Board of Supervisors seat on the Democratic side. Remember, there is a Republican candidate that will be facing off against Jen Allen, as it looks. I'd say she's going to take that one just based on numbers. But only just over 15,000 people turned out and voted in that primary. Yet there's probably, if my conservative estimates would put it, as a matter of fact, I've actually got the number here. Let me find it. In District 3, there's 43,000 Democrats. Registered Democrats, 43,800, just under 800. And there's another 41,000 independents. Hmm. So you look at that, we got 15,000 voters. That goes back to who shows up, the high propensity voters, the ones that the parties turn out, the ones that they work. And I'd say Jen Allen amongst those four candidates was definitely the more traditional Democratic challenger that you'd see in her. She ran a very smart campaign. My understanding, she knocked on a lot of doors, and she's got over 7,000 votes right now, and that's got her with about a 5,000 vote lead. So that kind of tells you, what the low turnout numbers are going to be. And I think we forget that sometimes. And I think that was a misstep in the campaign for county attorney as well. A lot of momentum, a lot of advertising, a lot of press, both letters to the editor from both Conover supporters and Jetty supporters. And they both had multiple family members writing things. But when it came down to it, the voters that showed up are those high propensity party voters. And I think that, again, I think that's true on both sides. Why you saw a lot of the results on the state legislature more decisively for the more conservative, engaged Republican voter as well.
I can't recall seeing so many, almost every day there was a letter to the editor, either for Conover or Jetty. And he had full page ads everywhere. It seemed like everywhere you looked, there was a Jetty ad. They poured a lot of money into this, Ted Maxwell.
Oh, there's absolutely no truth. They both had their supporters, their advocacy groups that were going to get behind them and put money behind it. You have to have money to be really effective in campaigns, and the more local, sometimes the money can make that much more influence on those campaigns. This one, I won't criticize Mike Jetty's campaign at all. I thought they ran a very solid campaign. They gave the message he wanted, the message he was running on. The question would be is, how would have it turned out if he had run as an independent? And, as you pointed out already, the whole race for county attorney was in that primary. And I think that's where the misstep and the misjudgment may have been, because, again, we keep forgetting every time we come into elections, people are saying, oh, no, there's going to be change. There's this movement. There's things going on. We've got to remember to learn from past elections. And the past elections show that the turnout in primaries is just not that high. And this year, ironically, with all the vitriol and everything else going on, the numbers look like they're going to come in significantly lower than 2022.
Yeah, it looks like it was not a great turnout for Pima County's election. Let's, before we take the break, how did Leah Marquez Peterson do? And we didn't get a chance to talk about this in the first half hour. Those are such important offices, seats on the Arizona Corporation Commission, and a lot of people don't cover it that much. And so, how did she do?
No, Leah did well. Now, there was three candidates running for three positions, so they all were going to move forward, but she was the highest vote-getter amongst the three candidates on the Republican ticket. So that one will be decided in the general with both three Democrats and three Republicans running for that Arizona Corporation Commission positions.
How many seats then are open in that?
Just three.
Three?
Just three, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I believe that one set up, Bill, as a three and two every 2 years.
All right. When we come back with General Ted Maxwell, and he keeps a very close eye on what's going on up in Phoenix, I want to get his take on where are we now with all of these initiatives and propositions that voters will have to decide on. We'll be back. It's Buckmaster on the day after the primary, Wednesday. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat here on the Buckmaster Show. And speaking of driving, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson is a great place to get away. It's Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Their elevation is about 5,000 to 7,000 feet. And, you know, it really does make a difference. If you're headed over there, it's going to be cooler. I'm looking at the midday temperature right now over in the southeast portion of Tucson. the Land of Enchantment. It's 83 right now. They're having a really nice day. And the temperatures, the temperatures at night are very pleasant, mid-60s, so not bad at all. Check it out, their website, southwestnewmexico.org, before you make the trip. You'll be very pleased with the hospitality that you will encounter over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. General Ted Maxwell is with us on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. He leads the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as president and CEO. He's been there since 2018, and part of his job, he is charged with keeping a close look at what's going on politically in the state of Arizona. General, do you have any better feel for what could be a long list of items that voters would be when it comes to propositions?
Well, we do. We're starting to get a little bit of picture of the better. There's one thing I'd like to cover before we go on, Vince. First, I'm Vince. Bill, I need to correct myself. So Leah Marquez Peterson was actually finished third in the Republican primary on that, but there are three positions going forward, and it is three positions for the Corporation Commission, like I said. So everybody's moving forward. So the general will be the big one there. But one thing before we go off the state legislature, something that I think your listeners may find interesting, I think you will as well, is yesterday there were 16 of the 30 seats for the state legislature that did not have a primary.
Wow.
And six of those don't even have a general. So we already know that there's four, and we know the names of four Democratic senators for next year and two Republicans. In the state house, where you've got 60 seats, so you've got 30 districts again with 60 seats, 12 of those districts had no primary.
Wow.
and four districts in those seats, three of them had primaries, but they won't have a general, nor will one of the districts, LD20, which is here in Tucson. In LD20, there was one candidate for Senate and two for the House, both Democrats in a very heavily Democrat district. Nobody else ran, no independents, no Republicans. So without, they know they're going to be back in the Senate and in the House. And that's kind of concerning, because we talk about the challenge of, you know, of the primary elections and the choices and everything that the voters have. But when you think about that, 16 of the Senate seats, no primaries, six of them have no general, and 12 of the House seats had no primaries yesterday. So when you go through and you go, oh, look, winner. Well, yeah, it's because they weren't running against anybody. So it's kind of interesting. It's something that we, at some time in the future, I just wanted to make you aware of that. There were
General, excuse me, before you transition into the propositions, what does that tell you then about how the makeup will look of the House and the Senate in 2025?
Well, surprisingly enough, I mean, it's not surprising. All the ones that we know we have, there were no opponents in the general, are seats that were safe. They would have been identified as such a positive Democratic or Republican leaning. Those were never any in fear. Remember, there's only about five seats that are considered competitive. That means less than 5% of a difference between the number of Democrats and Republicans. But what people are forgetting is, in most of these districts, somewhere from a quarter to a third of the voters are independent. So there's always that chance in the general that you're going to see something. And that's what you saw in LD17. Senator Wadsack held the LD17, which is almost a plus 10 Republican. She only won it by 2.5. And you heard, Dylan and Jim say earlier that the Democratic Party might be a little disappointed that she did not win. She does not appear like she's going to win LD17, because for them to take that seat with the thin margins up at the legislature, there was a lot of plans to put a lot of money, I think, in LD17 and make that a opportunity to flip the House or the Senate. And with Senator Leach back, it's, you know, yes, a very conservative choice. He governed as a conservative member of the legislature, but not quite as obvious of a target from trying to encourage those independent and maybe more moderate Republicans to come over to their side.
All right. What will the voters be facing? A long ballot for sure, huh?
Well, It is. It's still 14. Nothing has been thrown off the ballot yet. There's been a couple things that have come about. One of the ones that we've talked about in the past, and I'm sure we'll talk about in the future, is make elections fair. My show yesterday on the radio was around the primary and the challenges of primary, because right now it's very difficult, and it's not one of the reasons we don't have these primaries going on is it's difficult to get the signatures if you're not a member of the party. And the parties are being much more cautious about running multiple candidates in a primary if they have any say about it, because that means you're fighting amongst yourselves before you're going to then compete against somebody in the other party. You're giving them ammunition. Sorry for the ammunition reference, but you're giving them information to use against you in the primary. But as far as the ballots, we're still looking at all 14. Make Elections Fair has now got two lawsuits pending against it. All the lawsuits are now being filed to try to keep things off the ballot. And the irony on the Make Elections Fair side is they've got there's a Republican organization that's taken them to court, as well as three individual Democrat member citizens who have also filed a claim against them. And they're challenging it predominantly, believe it or not, on the single ballot initiative, which is the single topic initiative, which is ironic. I mean, everything has to do with an election, but, you know, part of it's about the primary, which is their primary focus. Part of it's about the general. Part of it's about funding for elections, you know, use of taxpayer fundings. So they're trying to argue that. I don't think those are going to be successful. I don't think the one that's targeted throwing the abortion, right to an abortion agenda is going to be successful. And most of these lawsuits you find are against the citizens' initiatives, not because the parties don't like that. They like the way it's worked right now. Let the legislature and the governors make the laws, and then this case, when the legislature and the governors don't agree on the laws, they like the idea that they can send it to the ballot. So we've still got a long way to go, but that should be getting wrapped up early, you know, late August, early September, because it has to be hit all the time constraints for it to be on the printed pamphlets. The pamphlets will go out with that data in it, even if it's going to be struck from the ballot. But when it comes to printing the ballots for the election, they have to have those decisions made. So I think watch the courts right now, Bill, is the course of action. That's going to be the one that you may see some changes on those.
And the border, and you may see changes as this goes on the border initiative.
Absolutely. That one's also being challenged in court, specifically on a single subject. And that's kind of the irony of it. The folks who are challenging the make elections fair on a single subject are defending the single subject on the border, saying it's all about the border. But, you know, they've got multiple issues inside of that, including constitutionalizing the penalty for fentanyl, some fentanyl crimes. And so there's a lot of stuff in there. And I think you're going to see a lot of them end up at the Arizona Supreme Court, because the ones that have already made it past the first one of being allowed to go forward or being a judge. There's been no ruling yet by a judge to pull one off, but there's been some that have moved forward already, and those are already being appealed again. So the same folks who brought the initial case are going to appeal it. And I think it's going to be an interesting month on the legal side of it.
All right. We'll bring you in later in August to get an update also on the RTA. We didn't really have a chance to get to it. Thank you so much, General Ted Maxwell. We'll look for your program every Tuesday here on KVOI 9 to 10 as you're part of the Jump in Tucson lineup.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate you having me on again. Sorry, I'm not in the – I always prefer to be in the studio.
Always. And we'll hopefully have you in studio for the next time. Thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show, our day after the primary edition. Hope everybody enjoyed it, learned some information. Try to clarify who, as we move forward now into the general, who's up, who's down, and who's in between. Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.